Welcome back to the Daily Drama on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the Reporters Roundtable tonight with some of the top stories of the week. Of course, we're going to talk about that bad air quality here and in the Northeast U.S., that horrific shooting at Washington National Cemetery in Prince George's County. Of course, the indictment of former President Donald Trump and the capture of a wayward black bear in Brooklyn this morning. We begin tonight with Annalisa Gale, reporter and anchor with DC News Now, and Keith Alexander, DC Crime and Courts reporter with the Washington Post. Also, you, our listener, if you have a comment or question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Annalisa, thank you so much for joining the conversation. Great to have you on the program again.
Hi, Harold. Thanks. Good to be here.
Absolutely. Keith, how are you? Good to talk to you again. It's been a minute.
Harold, it's good to be here. Thank you, my brother. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Annalisa, I'll ask you, how are your lungs doing right about now?
Oh, my goodness. I'm glad you asked. I was just saying that today that my lungs don't feel the same. I got to do something. Maybe I'll do a face steam or something like that. I don't know if that will help, but my Caribbean mother would say it may help. But I don't know. It's definitely tough. You know, yesterday we had the worst air conditions that we've seen in a very long time. Definitely longer than I've something that I haven't seen since I've been here. I've been here for more than 13 years now, and I've never seen it like that. It was definitely tough. Even when you were turning on your air conditioner, you were getting some of that smoke into your car if you were in some of those areas that were hardest hit. So glad to see it clearing out right now, and hopefully we'll have cleaner air by the weekend.
You know, Keith, I saw something on social media yesterday, I think, that said it all. It was a plastic baggie that had some air in it. And my friend on social media said, now selling air from South Florida, $450 or best offer. Because, I mean, that I've never seen anything quite like this. I mean, this was looking like pre-pandemic China.
And, you know, what's interesting is that this yesterday was the worst in the nation. I mean, the stories that came out that our air index in Washington, D.C. hit the highest, the worst in the nation. That's even higher than what it was in New York. And New York was right, you know, in the thick of things. That's how bad it was. I was trying my best not to wear a mask. I was so done with masks during COVID. And I said, I'm walking through the streets of D.C., wearing a mask and barely breathing. I was glad it wasn't August, because they would have found me stretched out somewhere. But it was really bad.
Yeah, you know, I think I was kind of fortunate yesterday. I was at home in Baltimore yesterday, and it didn't bother me so much. I know that there have been reports even before yesterday of, you know, people saying that they could smell it, they could taste it. Obviously, the PM, the particulate matter, a microflex of burnt particles that are coming in from these wildfires in Canada. You know, this is more than a notion. This is more than just, you know, the trending talk right now, Annalisa. This is some really, really tough stuff, particularly for people who like to spend their days, or let's say afternoons, or whenever they have time off from work during the course of the workday to exercise.
Yeah, I actually, for the last 2 days, I've been taking my workouts inside and doing it on the treadmill, just because I like to be outside, but it just wasn't safe. And even with going into the gym yesterday morning, I saw lots of people with their masks on, like Keith said, and going inside with their masks on. So, unfortunately, we had to bring back the mask to make it through.
Yeah.
I was surprised how many people I saw actually exercising, and people who look like us, outside jogging yesterday morning, and that really surprised me And also, you know, a little bit, because I was a little concerned about, like, you're trading one health thing for another, being out here breathing this air and getting your lungs, basically overworking your lungs by breathing that stuff into your lungs while you're working out. It made no sense to me.
You know, one of the things, and there's always some kind of political angle to this, Keith, we've got the climate change issue. We have, when you talk about some of the reporting, you know, we see the effects of this in, you know, in the Northeast, in New York, in D.C., in Pennsylvania, etc. But we really haven't seen a lot of pictures of these horrific wildfires. And people can talk about climate change. Of course, the Biden administration has sent firefighters there to help fight this. But this has become more, you know, than a notion. It initially had been, you know, kind of an annoyance, but now we're seeing just how serious this issue is.
And we're also seeing, Harold, we're also seeing just how dangerous chemical warfare really could be. No one's really paid attention to the fact that this is what could happen, right? If something is launched into the air and people don't even know it in terms of a weapon and weaponizing various things put in the air. And that's really hit home over the past couple of days, just how dangerous things could really be.
Yeah, and I would say that this is the true end of the year science project for schools, because, you know, everyone has an opportunity to have a chance to study these environmental issues. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about some of the top stories of the week. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Again, lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Annalisa, I want to move to this really difficult tragedy upon tragedy story that has unfolded this week. A continuation of that tragedy in the wake of the death of 10-year-old Ariana Davis, this killing at Washington National Cemetery in Suitland. There are so many different stories to look at, you know, out of this. You know, there is the gun violence issue. It's the can't we all get along issue. It is the loss of a child. It is the issue of things happening at a cemetery where, you know, there just doesn't seem to be anything that is sacred.
What happened today was that the funeral home owner that was accused of killing a man during that service is actually being held without bond tonight. Mm-hmm. The family members of the suspect identified as Wilson Chavez, 48-year-old owner of Compassion and Serenity Funeral Home, who's accused of shooting 30-year-old Ronald Stevens Banks. He's being held without bond because the judge disagreed with family members who tried to paint him today as not being a danger to the community. So that's the latest on that. A lot of emotions, obviously, from the family members who were, trying to lay the young girl, 10-year-old Ariana Davis, to rest after she was hit by a stray bullet in D.C. So today, you know, the state's attorney just coming out and just doubling down on the fact that, you know, gun violence must stop, but speaking a little bit after that bond hearing today.
Yeah.
But you know what's interesting?
Go ahead, Keith.
Is that this is not unusual, so sad, right? That shootings at funerals, at funeral homes during these services, sadly, that's not unusual. We just saw something recently in D.C., right after a funeral. We know that detectives show up at funerals for this very reason. Homicide detectives show up at funerals for this very reason, because oftentimes violence will erupt. But what makes this case so unusual is that this was a sort of a vendetta, if you will, between a funeral home owner who got offended and who actually was a subject of a restraining order against another funeral home and its employees who happened to be also part of this funeral. That's what happened here. It was allegedly a beef between the business of funeral home owner and employees of another funeral home. And that's what happened here. That's what our prosecutors are saying.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. What do you think about this? Give us a call if you can. I got to tell you, Keith, I don't understand it.
It's sad. It was interesting. If you look at the details of what happened, right? There was a confrontation by the alleged shooter and the preacher who was presiding over the service at the funeral home. And then the confrontation happened. And then the funeral home director allegedly lunges and then falls down.
Yeah.
When he gets back up, then he pulls out of out the gun, which leads people to believe the reason why he pulled out the gun was because he was embarrassed by falling down. And that's like he didn't pull out a gun previously during the confrontation. He pulls out after he falls down. And so, again, short tempers, aren't the firearms everywhere. This is often what happens.
See, here's the thing that I don't understand about this, guys, is we have seen all kinds of things happening at cemeteries of late. We've seen carjackings at cemeteries. We have seen other shootings at cemeteries and the like. And of course, this latest incident. But this is the thing. If this is happening the way that police and the charging documents suggest, what is going on in the minds of people where you would have a gun at a cemetery? Okay, and let's just take this particular case. You know, Annalisa, cemeteries, funeral homes are supposed to be places of mourning and peace and comfort. From what we understand, the murder of Ariana Davis had nothing to do with this particular incident, which is why I say this is tragedy upon tragedy.
Yeah, this is something that Prince George's County Police and police departments all across our region are trying to wrap their heads around. They're trying to figure out how to reduce the gun violence in our communities. And unfortunately, yes, the police department saying that, a separate shooting happening at the same time as a funeral for a young girl who was also killed by gun violence was the case this week.
Yeah, I just don't see how that family is going to find any peace in the midst of their mourning. Very, very difficult. Let me go to the phone real quick. 202-319-7810. Jonathan, calling from District Heights. Jonathan, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I was just calling to let you know, man, my thoughts about that is that, I just really think that people's man concept in their mind is just so warped today. For a person to come up to a funeral where people are putting to rest, someone else, and then you're supposed to be a funeral home owner helping these people grieve, helping these people get through this time, but yet you would come up there to display those particular types of actions. But it's, to me, not just here, it's going on all around the world, man. It's just Satan is just demonically taking over the minds of people, man, with this music, this rap music, these young people out here, man. It's just like everybody is on guard. Everybody is just with a gun. Everybody is just like, whatever it is, this is this cowboy and Indian type of mentality. And what's happening is, man, is that the people that are in charge, the people that govern our communities, that govern our courts and all that, they're not doing anything either. They're patting this stuff on the hand, and they're not putting these people in jail or setting the examples, terms of dealing with people on a much stronger level, than just letting them back out with a box on their ankle or a box on their arm.
Well, let me say this, Jonathan, because at least in this case, Wilson Chavis will remain behind bars. He's being held without bond. And just a side note, also the suspect in that shooting in Shaw on yesterday, DeMarcus Barnett, also being held without bond. There was an innocent man caught in the crossfire for that as well. Jonathan, thank you so much for your phone call. I need to take a break. Annalisa Gale, we got to let you go. Thank you so much for your input in this conversation. Look to talk to you again. Keith, we're going to talk to you on the other side. Lines are still open as we talk about the top stories of the week at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The Trump indictment is part of the conversation next. Stay with us. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. That discussion continues in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue the discussion with Keith Alexander, D.C. Crime and Courts reporter with The Washington Post, as we discuss some of the top stories of the week. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You are welcome to tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. We will be joined shortly by political analyst Dr. Sharice Nelson, but I want to ask you, Keith, is the announcement last night, or I should say the revealing of the indictment of Donald Trump by Donald Trump last night, is that going to be one of those things down the road where we say, where were you when Donald Trump was federally indicted?
You know, I don't think so. I think people are going to be more trying to remember, where were you if he is actually convicted?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so Trump has been charged. He's gone through a lot of court proceedings in the past, right? And he survived. I think now people are going to say, okay, he's now been indicted. Now let's see what happens. If he is found guilty, I think that's going to be the time when people are like, okay, now things have changed. But right now, I think it's more of, okay, well, we've seen something like this before. He's been charged before, but nothing has really actually has stuck. Let's see what happens this time.
Yeah. We are now joined by political analyst Dr. Sharice Nelson. Hey, Sharice, how are you?
How are you?
Doing just fine. Yeah, doing just fine. Certainly a very, very busy week here. Yes. in the news department. I'm going to ask you, have you had a chance to take a look at the DOJ's indictment document?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And it's thorough. It's funny to me because people have to understand the federal government is like a cruise liner, right? It is not a speedboat, right? It's not a kayak. It's not a speedboat. It takes a while to get things accomplished. It's designed that way, right? Because it's designed where you have to get a considerable amount of input to get things accomplished. And so the indictment is thorough. It's seven counts, and I think Merrick Garland has been, well, let's first, you know, the choice of Merrick Garland is clear, right? Because, and why he's, I think, zealous about this is that Merrick Garland was denied the opportunity to even be voted on for the Supreme Court. And so now he's in the position as, the Attorney General leading the DOJ and making sure in many ways to right wrongs, because that's at the core of who he is. If people remember, he was a part of the Timothy McVeigh case. So he's had this kind of reputation of being methodical, and that's what we see in this indictment. He's extremely methodical, and I think that all the charges will stick. Now, I do believe that they'll stick. The question then is, what does sentencing look like because these charges, I believe, will stick?
And I think that's one of the That is really one of the big legal questions. Jack Smith had that press conference in brief today. I think that, that's probably the shortest press conference I've ever seen coming from anybody in the Department of Justice. He said what he said, and then he rolled out, obviously not answering any questions. I didn't expect him, Keith, to answer, you know, any questions whatsoever. Was that, do you think that he was feeling any of the of the pressure of saying, I do have to come out and say something because this is such a big deal? Or is this more pro forma?
You know, this is unprecedented, right? A former president being charged with felony counts, a base of treason, espionage. This is unprecedented. And so, yes, I can see him definitely coming out and saying something. And basically what he said was like, no one is above the law. Well, he had to say that. And but he can't say anything else about this case. He was that specific about the charges. He can't be, and he won't be. But he did want to make a blanket statement just to let everyone know that Trump is not above the law. The same law that applies to Trump applies to everyone else. And I think that was more of a sense of, if there's any question out there as to why we took so long, this is why we took so long. We've got audio, we've got video, we've got text messages, we got testimony. This is why it took so long to get where we are today. Mm-hmm.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Vivian calling from D.C. Vivian, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, you know, pretty much, like I said, I'm calling from D.C. I'm actually on the way to church right now.
Okay.
In regards to, like, the gun violence, I feel like because I've been here since I was young, I've lived in all four parts of D.C., it's never been this bad. I kind of come from the era, like, I was born in 1990, so I am young, but I was still born in the era where it's like my father, my mother, like, you know, that they, you know what I'm saying? I feel like the government took a lot of the extra programs to help children develop themselves so that when they become adults, they know how to deal with themselves. You know what I'm saying? A lot of kids these days, they don't know who God is. They don't know how to pray. You know, they don't know how to sit down and read a Bible. You know, the social media has taken us away from, I mean, it's just sin all around us. You know what I'm saying? So when you have that mixed with the Latin or the playground of the mind, you know, the mind of someone that doesn't have their mind focused is a battleground. You know, so if you have that, you know, regardless of the age, you know, you're always going to end up with steal, kill, and destroy, which is the devil's plan. You know what I'm saying? And he doesn't come to kill everybody, and he doesn't come to destroy anybody, but he may come to steal from everybody. Like, I'm just saying. You know what I'm saying? People don't match word with word these days. You got to fight word with word. It's like nothing about life is going to be easy. Nothing was said in the Bible that it would be easy, but you got to fight word with word, even if you find a little piece of word in every day.
Well, let me say this. So I think to your point that I think there is a faith component that is needed and a faith component that is missing. But I also don't think that that is the end all be all. I think that, I think that there are other, there's something else going on. And some people have suggested maybe this is the result of the after effects of the pandemic. I have argued in discussing this gun violence thing that we did have gun violence before the pandemic, but I also, and I'd like my other guests to chime in with this, but I would think that you make a really excellent point, and being the more, you know, the most seasoned person in this conversation, back in the 1980s, you could argue that when D.C. was called Dodge City, when people called it the murder capital of the world, that the lion's share of those of the gun violence was around the drug trade.
Right.
But
right.
Now it's I would argue it's around as they say you know, disputes, beefs, all of these other kinds of things. What do you think, Keith?
You know, I lived here. I came to D.C. in 1987. So I was here during the 80s. And mm-hmm. and you're absolutely right. When I talk to police officers and senior police officials, what they tell me, the difference between now and then, is Harold, you hit the nail right on the head, right? It was more concentrated back in the 80s with drug violence. It was retaliation for drugs and all of that. Today, it's disputes. Today, it is people don't fight. They don't argue. They just pull out a gun and they shoot. And they
everything
shoot
based off emotion. They don't even think.
They do not care. their target is in front of them, but they're shooting everywhere around an innocent bystander, just like the gentleman who was shot killed over by Howard Theater yesterday,
right,
who was not even part of a dispute, was hit by
they
a
don't even know how to
and
shoot.
Killed. And so
yeah,
that. I'm just hearing a few minutes.
No, that's right. And Vivian, I'm going to let you go, but we're going to continue that part of the conversation. Thank you so much. Keith, please continue.
So I'm just saying, so when I talked to the D.C. police officers today, what they're telling me is that what they're seeing that they have never seen before are young people. Now, mind you, the shootings at Shaw and at the cemetery, that involved young people.
Right.
But what police officers are saying is that they're seeing young people, their first charge as a juvenile today is armed. It's an armed carjacking, armed assault, a shooting, an AWIC, assault with intent to kill. 20, 30 years ago, the first contact with police, with young people, was truancy or robbery, nothing involving a firearm or a knife. That's what's changed. And it goes back to people today, guns are everywhere. And that really is what it comes down to. Guns are everywhere, and that's how people solve disputes today, is a gun. At the cemetery, yeah, if that gentleman did not have a gun, when he approached somebody and then fell over and then got embarrassed and got angry, instead of pulling out a gun, maybe he would have argued or maybe tried to throw a punch. But instead, he went to his side and pulled out a firearm.
I grew up in Oakland, California, right? And I was born in 87. Right. So, you know, I'm growing up at the end of that crack kind of drug era. Guns were prevalent. Guns were always around. You know, and now that I live in the Southern context, guns are around even more. I think what's actually different now, I understand looking at metrics and marking crime, and I don't want to devalue that point, Keith. But I think the bigger thing now is that there's no code anymore. So what used to be the case, at least in my neighborhood and growing up, was that the reason that you saw this retaliation between, you know, one drug faction and the other drug faction is because the code was that there was these civilians that were seen as innocent bystanders,
right,
and they should not be involved, right? If it happens, right, then there's a level of retribution that the community pays, right, because of that. Now there's no more code, right? There's no more code, and there's no more code. There's no credence, or there's no, in my opinion, support or reverence for the folks in the communities that were attached, right, in many ways to those drug communities that kept things under control, right? There's no more code left. And because in my opinion, the code has now left, it has made it easier for us to see life as disposable, especially for young black men and women.
And so, that's true. Back at the code was children and women were off limits, right? That was the code. Children and women, if they weren't part of a drug trade, they're off limits. Just as you said, now if a kid, if a woman, or for somebody, an innocent bystander is hit by a bullet, oh, well, they shouldn't have been there. And I've heard people say in charging documents, that's what they say. Oh, well, they shouldn't have been there.
You know, Keith, you said something interesting. You came to D.C. in 1987. I was always, I was born here, but I left in 1991, came back in 2001. But the irony is that in the year that I left here and moved to Florida, the murder rate was the highest that it has been probably in the past 30 years, 482 murders in D.C. Right. in 1991. We just crossed 100 murders in D.C., and we are at the half-year mark. And yet, and we can talk about the fading emotional memory from 1991, that people who were here, people who were paying attention, whether they were really paying attention or were forced to pay attention because these things were happening, as they said, you know, blood running in the street, as it was. But are we, even with just crossing the 100 murder homicide mark this week, and obviously one is too many, so don't get me wrong, but are we more aware of it now because the type of homicides that we are seeing in D.C. are different? You know, I mean, back in 91, it's like, oh, yeah, that's the drug trade. I'm not doing crack. Nobody in my family's doing crack. We don't have guns. That's only in one part of the city. That's them. But now, are we looking at it differently because it's happening in Northeast, and it's happening in Southeast, it's happening in Ward 1, as well as Ward 4, as well as Ward 7 and 8. Is that why there seems to be more concern now?
There's more concern. That's part of it, Harold. But also, it's the stray bullet. It's the child walking down the street, the child going for an ice cream cone, the young lady driving a car down the street, getting all these innocent people who were not the intended target being taken out by a bullet that wasn't meant for them. That's part of it. Secondly, there is much more social media now, right? We're seeing a lot of these stories are being fueled on social media, and then you're getting the beeping back and forth over social media, where one neighborhood is beefing with another neighborhood over social media as a result of a murder. And that also was fueling this tension that caused this retaliation, that caused people to go into other neighborhoods to retaliate because they got on social media and bragged about a shooting or made fun of somebody who was shot. And I think that also was really playing out here in these shootings today.
You know, Sharice, I would agree with that because if you lived uptown back in the 90s, pre 24-hour news cycle, pre-social media, and there was, you know, and somebody got shot east of the river, if you didn't watch the news, you didn't know.
Yeah, but so I think attaching this to social media is a bit dangerous. I think social media has accelerated it. And I say this because my first time coming to D.C. Was in 2003, visiting on a college tour. I knew that the city was too much in many ways like like Oakland, California, and I was nervous about all the stuff I was going to be able to get into, right, at 18 years old coming from California. And so I wanted something a little slower because I was concerned that I wasn't going to get my education. But I did come back to the D.C. area in 2008, right? And the same phenomenon in many ways was there. The same phenomenon as far as the shootings, the particular violence, right? We were told as Howard students consistently, no matter what our age, right, not to be certain places on the campus at night. And I think those things exist. I think the difference, though, is that is the celebration of those tensions and those beasts, right? Again, to me, it goes back to code. We did not there. If it happened, it happened. It wasn't celebrated. It wasn't encouraged. It didn't make you any more of a man or make you any stronger as a woman to participate in this type of conversation, right? Because that was seen to be it was understood that it happened, but it was not seen to be favorable. It was not seen to be something that then made you an active part of your community. And I truly believe this loss of code is only been amplified by social media.
Well, what I, and don't get me wrong, what I mean is that information is moving so much faster now than it was in 1991. And
I agree with that completely. Information is moving faster.
But please do not dismiss. I just covered a murder case, right? Micaiah Wilson, 10-year-old little girl who was caught by a bully, Clay Terrace, back in 2018. And prosecutors were able to find individuals who they believe were responsible for this fatal shooting because the individuals went on social media and bragged and talked about it.
Yeah.
So do not dismiss the fact that people are going onto social media to brag, to taunt, to really amplify violence in communities.
Yeah,
but I guess that's my point, Harold. Is that point right there? Right, that is not something that was widely accepted before. Right, that level of bragging, that level of celebration. Right, however you want to categorize it, that was not seen as favorable in our neighborhoods, in our Black communities. No matter what, you know, what class of person you were, didn't matter if you cleaned, no matter if you were the janitor, the mechanic, or a person who went to college or a person who worked at corporate, none of that was acceptable. And to me, that's what's changed.
Well, and like I said, I agree with both of you. What I'm saying is that when I talk about the way this city now feels, because we know the information, the instant way that this information becomes available, whether it's social media or whether it is this news program or whether it's the Washington Post or whether it's, you know, Channel 4, 5, 7, 9, 50, whatever, you know, there are more avenues for us to even hear about it. And that's one thing. And then, of course, like you said, Charisse, there is, you know, it is the bragging on social media by the perpetrators of these crimes. But I would also argue that more people outside of, and this is just, you know, my own personal theory, there were more people now outside of the drug culture who have guns, as opposed to, you know, again, in 1991, like you said, Keith, you know, that was them. That was the business of the drug culture. But, you know, it's unlikely that your neighbor who went to work every day, who was raising his or her family and kids, if they had a gun, the gun was in the house. They didn't take it with them. But now everybody, it seems, has a gun on them.
Yes, and
everyone has a gun, and they don't know how to use it.
Mm.
They're just, and a lot of these guns have they're assault weapons, or they can just spray randomly. And so, in the 80s, when they were shooting at one person, that one person is going to get shot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they shoot at one person, they're sprayed bullets.
Yeah.
And whoever is around that one person is getting shot. And that's also the difference. The firepower has changed in 30 years.
Go ahead, Charisse.
But Harold, what I think that you're not, when you're talking about, like, everybody has guns now, we have to think, you know, I'm a political science professor, so you have to think policy and why that's the case. There was an assault weapons ban, right? We went from having a ban, and everyone knows that once you have a ban on something, you know, once the elastic is pulled one way, it's going to pop back the other. And so what we saw after that ban expired, I think it's 96 or 97 when that ban expired, you see a proliferation of all types of guns. And so, yes, I agree that your neighbor next door didn't have a gun. That's because there was a level of there was regulation around what was even possible for you to have. Once that regulation goes away, and now you know that two houses down the street probably has one, then I need to get one too.
Yeah, and to that point, as I said, even if there's a big difference between having, you know, a gun at home to protect your household and taking a gun to Wegmans.
Right.
you know, or taking the gun to the car wash because you think that somebody else has one. And then, of course, there, as you mentioned, Keith, of course, there are, you know, the beefs. Let me go back to the phone lines. Brian, calling from Stafford, Virginia. Brian, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, thank my call. I don't know if you all discussed this, but we can't take away the influence of the music industry on how rap music really influences the youth culture and how it affects their mindset and how they behave. I think that's a powerful influence. And these record companies and these and the media industry has really had to have a hold on our youth. That doesn't take away their behavior, but it has a large influence. I'm going to hang up and take your, and listen to what you have to say for that.
Okay, Brian, thank you. Sharice, I'll let you start with that one, and then Keith.
Oh, yeah, so I completely agree, right, is that rap culture started as an expression of levels of oppression and the violence and the trauma that was seen and quickly morphed into what we like to call now in the industry as death culture. I agree that that's the case. However, I think that what you were discussing about the dissemination of information changes even how we control that, right? Mm-hmm. So before we were able to control that by you know, regulation, right? It was like FEC regulation. Before there was more controlled ways to be able to control the dissemination of whatever message, and we have lost that, and because of the proliferation of information. So yes, I believe that rap has been warped and has been used in many ways to then attract the tickling ears of young people. But I also think that there's an inability to be able to control those messages because there's no real way of being able to, or we haven't really clearly understood how to then get a control on the proliferation of information.
Keith.
One of the defense attorneys in this murder case that I covered last week, past couple of weeks actually, regarding Mikhail Wilson, the co-defendants are rappers.
Mm-hmm.
And that came up, that they have these rap lyrics that were violent in some of their raps where they were allegedly bragging about shooting and all that. And one of the things that the defense attorney said to the jury in her closing argument was, no one was out here shooting when Bob Marley was singing about I Shot the Sheriff. And what she was saying was that there, you know, to blame song.
Wow.
And lyrics that makes no sense. And that was a very good point.
Yeah.
I Shot the Sheriff was a popular song. People were not going out shooting sheriffs and police officers when that song came out. And she just threw it out there, is that you can't blame lyrics of a song for how people behave, because what you're hearing today is not unusual, and it happened years ago in lyrics.
In these last few minutes, I need a woo-saw moment. Oh, my gracious. Where are these bears coming from, Keith?
Hey, boo-boo. You know, thank you, right. This is a woo-saw moment. It was interesting to see the Metropolitan Police Department spokesperson talking about this in the midst of all this crime going on. He's talking about a bear loose in D.C. It was kind of refreshing. The black bears coming from Western Maryland, they're being pushed out. They're in Howard County, in Montgomery County, and now look, they are now coming into the city. Their habitat has been, you know, people are building on their land, and they're trying to find food, trying to find places to stay. They are being pushed out of Western Maryland, much more so down here to the city.
Or maybe he was, you know, trying to find his way to Catholic University for graduation. He was by my, you know, my dad's old house in, you know, in Brookland. And, you know, everybody.
Hyattsville.
That's right.
Yep. Those areas are very different
down here those areas that you just named are different now, and it's only, I mean, I got to D.C. in 08, and they're totally different places, and it's 2023.
So you're saying this was a bougie bear?
No, I'm not. No, I didn't say that.
It was a black bear. It was a puppy bear.
And, you know, there was a huge bear in Colombia last week. I mean, this bear was walking on two legs, as we know they often do. But I mean this thing was humongous. And I think, you know, to Keith's point, these bears that are usually coming from, you know, Western Maryland, they're making their way, you know, into the cities. And I mean, this, I would say this is a different kind of gentrification when it comes to these animals. So, yeah.
But the good thing is that allegedly they're not aggressive. Allegedly they will run from you faster than you will run from it. Allegedly.
Let us hope so. Dr. Sharice Nelson, Keith Alexander, thanks for talking to us. We also want to thank Annalisa Gale for joining us earlier. That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Friday, June 9th. For news director Renee Nash, reporters Millette Green, Bramante Bryan, producer Candace Wilson, and engineer Bobby Adams, I'm Harold Fisher. Good night and have a wonderful weekend.